that's the great Freddie Hubbard on trumpet with Crisis, the final track of his 1961 album, Ready for Freddie. Wayne Shorter on tenor sax, Bernard McKinney on euphonium, McCoy Tyner on piano, Art Davis on bass, and Elvin Jones on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And today, we return to the subject we began yesterday, except with a lot more muscle, relating to one of our favorite people, Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and Chelsea Clinton, anybody named Clinton, and the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation. Charles Ortel is back with us today to report on his latest forensic findings on the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Foundation, which he calls and still insists is, quote, the largest unprosecuted fraud in U.S. history, unquote. The former Wall Street banker who blew the whistle on major U.S. corporations engaging in massive stock fraud during the 2007-2008 crash has set aside his sights fully on charity fraud now that he's retired. I really ought to put on my glasses, don't you think? But usually I put them on to hear, I take them off to think. For more than 2 years, Ortel has been unearthing startling information and records about the foundation, its operations, and its principals and officers' outrageous conduct in flouting charity laws, both in the United States and around the world. Charles, thanks for being with us again today.
It's my great pleasure, Eutrice. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. I had put my glasses down and couldn't find them. I have found them. This is what happens. Well, you know, it's an amazing thing. We had discussed this program a while back. And today, breaking news about something that should be very familiar to you based on where you are with your forensic research. What was it that struck you today?
Well, there's a tremendous amount going on. You know, we have this coordinated assault on the Trump family that was amped up, I think the record will show, beginning around June 30th, 2017, a young Wall Street Journal reporter named Shane Harris. He actually reached out to me and to ask some questions, but he wrote a piece targeting a fellow named Peter Smith who died in May at the age of 81, and trying to make it seem as if Peter Smith was at the center of a conspiracy involving Republican operatives, and Peter was certainly a Republican, and potentially Mike Flynn and the Russians. So when you look through Shane Harris's Twitter feed, which is quite unless he deletes it, what you see is back and forth with Jen Palmieri prior to the issuance of this story, and who was the spokesperson for the Hillary Clinton presidential campaign as a Clinton crony, and also with Mike Isikoff, who is, I forget where he is now, but an investigative reporter, promoting this story that appeared on June 30th and promoting Shane Harris's appearance on MSNBC around that same moment with Rachel Maddow. And I think he also may have been on with other MSNBC people. But you know, the anti-Trump, the never-Trump Republicans and the anti-Trump Democrats just ever since then have been sending this story into the stratosphere. And now in the last 24 hours with the revelation of Donald Trump Jr.'s emails, and his possible meeting with his shadowy character, he's got everybody focused on, what exactly were members of the Trump family doing during 2016 in relation to getting opposition research on the Clintons. Now, that's all interesting stuff, and I come at life primarily not from a written perspective, but from a numerical perspective, because it's, you know, you can argue forever about words, but it's, you know, only a bonehead is going to argue that 100 is less than 10. And so when you look at the significance of what's going on the one hand, we have a neophyte family, powerful, highly experienced, rich, deciding to get very actively involved in politics. And instead of going through the normal progression of life, you know, where you start out small and work your way up to a bunch of positions, Donald Trump decided, why not just run for president? And he won. So that's a pretty big story. On the other hand, you have another family, the Clinton family, who, you know, arguably has never done a thing in its life in the private sector, in the competitive sphere, away from cronyism, away from the political, you know, corruption that I think is omnipresent, particularly in a place like Arkansas, where they began cutting their teeth. And somehow magically at the end of, what is it now, 37 years, is rumored to have wealth in the hundreds of millions of dollars. This is a family who, while Hillary Clinton served as Secretary of State, decided somehow, I would argue with the connivance of the Obama administration and their insiders, allowed our government's secret records to be stored on private servers, possibly, you know, multiple ones, maybe located in their Chappaqua home, in their D.C. home, and possibly in the Clinton Foundation offices and other places, allowed top secret information to go through these pipes, be stored on private email accounts. But more to the point, and may have been, you know, during Hillary Clinton's tenure, not kept securely in these various places, meaning the visitors to the various Clinton residences and people who interacted with the Clinton residents might have had access to all these secrets. But more to the point, you know, during this tenure, it's a matter now of public record that Bill Clinton, husband of the Secretary of State, was compensated by Clinton Foundation donors. It's a matter of public record that major governments around the world contributed to the Clinton Foundation, yet the Clinton Foundation didn't report these donations. It's a matter of public record that no member of the Clinton family or crony has reported, registers what's called a foreign agent under the FARA Act, when some of them seem, by their own admission, to have been acting for the benefit of foreign governments inside this country, potentially raising money. And to top it all off, from February 1st, 2013, where I think people knew before then that Hillary Clinton was likely to run for office and therefore contributions sent to the foundation and sent her away and business sent to the family might curry favor with somebody who looked like she should have won the second time she was going to run. Well, in this period from February 1st, 2013 until I believe it is May 2015, the Clintons thought it was A-OK just to house all of these government records, top-secret government records, in their various residences on these private systems. And you don't see Jake Tapper, who as some, and I'm sorry to do this, Jake, but as a mutual friend of ours likes to refer to him now as Fake Yapper. You don't see Jake Tapper and the MSNBC crowd and the NBC crowd and the New York Times crowd and the Washington Post raising word one about the fact that our government, our property, records of we the people, were stolen by the Clintons, kept in their private residences at a time when they were fundraising, at a time when they were enriching themselves, to the tunes of tens of millions, maybe more than that. There's no outrage there, but Donald Trump Jr. is on the front page, the top of the front page of the New York Times today, three separate stories, because he decided to take a meeting with somebody who indicated possibly that they might have damaging information on his father's opponent. I mean, there's no sense of balance here, and I think this explains why, you know, people love listening to your show and don't waste any time reading the New York Times or the Washington Post or listening to CNN or MSNBC anymore, because it's just garbage. There's no sense of proportion. There's no sense that, you know, we have here in the Clinton Foundation, and it's not just the main one, in its various satellites, we have the largest unprosecuted set of charity frauds, frankly, of frauds ever attempted anywhere in the world. And it's not by some idiot, Bernie Madoff. It's by somebody who was elected president of the United States twice, governor multiple times in Arkansas, a senator in New York twice, somebody who thought that she was going to be the first female president of the United States twice. These are educated people. These are people who ought to know better. And the standards, the way our framers thought about this country going way back, is that as you rose up ever higher positions, you had more and more obligation to lead people, not less and less. They weren't trying to create a hereditary, you know, kingdom for politicians who were above the law. And that's the way the Clintons are behaving now. Now, you know, I don't like some of what the Trumps are doing, having family members in the administration. I don't think that's a good idea at all. I don't like the way the Trumps are managing their personal finances, not just Donald, you know, without putting trust in place. And I've said so publicly on your show and even on Fox. I was one of the first people to point that out. So I'm not, you know, just a blinded supporter of, you know, either side of the political spectrum. I think that the traditional divide in politics is not serving we the people well. We don't need political parties anymore. This isn't, you know, 1780 or 1850 when there wasn't, you know, the Internet. And thanks, Al Gore, for inventing that, by the way. You know, we have tools at our disposal now, Utrecht. I mean, I'm sitting here in a public space near Grand Central Station speaking to you and speaking to our listeners. We don't need to go and speak to the world from a studio. We don't need editors. We don't need fact checkers. We could do our own hard work and let the people check our facts. And that, I think, is what the people are doing now. They're sick and tired of the garbage, the dribble that comes around out of the mouths of these self-anointed pundits in the so-called mainstream media that got everything wrong. And I mean everything wrong about the 2016 election from start to finish. Not one person I could think of, you know, accurate, with possibly the exception of Eric Bolling of Fox, and I may be leaving people out, but not one person on the, you know, the established legacy media dial on CBS, on NBC, on ABC, CNN, not one of those pundits got it right about who was going to win. Not one of those pundits is getting it right now about what matters to the people who have been left behind by the big government that's strangling all of us, overpaying its people. You know, not requiring them to subject themselves to the same laws and regulations we the people have to deal with, you know, and so anyway, I think the present frenzy it may well end up blowing right back into the faces of the editors of the New York Times, of the owners, the principal owners of the New York Times, the Washington Post, and these mainstream legacy media outlets. Because, you know, the truth is, if you want to get outraged about something, you should all be outraged about the ongoing, unprosecuted, massive, counting all elements, you know, charity frauds that could be running into the trillions of dollars when you count the connections to government programs. Not that I have a point of view on your question.
Of course. I go back to the early indications when Hillary Clinton had been having frequent meetings with China, for example. And I don't recall there was a big hubbub about it.
Well, right. I mean, I think when we start to think clearly about what is involved, and I obviously don't know as an insider, but what I surmise is involved, thinking through a transition from one presidential team to a different presidential team, from one team backed by one party to a different team backed by, you know, a polar opposite party, you can't accomplish that overnight. So after the election, and indeed before the election, feelers, I'm sure, are put out to key governments around the world to make sure that the transition is as seamless as is possible. That's, you know, that's something you would imagine happens and should happen for the benefit of all of us. You want a smooth transition. Now, in the case, I think what you're referring to there is that back in 1996, there were concerns that the Chinese government was perhaps trying to buy influence and interfere in the election to the benefit of the Clintons. And there were endless investigations of that. I actually was just going back over that recently. And the file is, when you look at it in hindsight, the very same people who figure in these Clinton Foundation alleged frauds, the Cheryl Millses, the Maggie Williams, the Peter O'Keefe, the Terry McAuliffe, and the list goes on and on and on, feature in this period in 1996. And the very same practices that now we started learning about them again in 2015, evidence that investigators validly called for getting was delayed until after the 1996 investigation, or obstructed, or it was deleted. These same practices are endemic, it seems, to the Clinton regime. And, you know, when you look through the long history here, the sad reality is that government actors and powerful oligarchs of all across the world, the globalists, all see ways in which they can benefit enormously from having their team in the U.S. government prepared to give their various companies and friends and allies contracts and other benefits, wireless licenses, concessionary loans from organizations where the U.S. has tremendous influence, like the World Bank or the IFC, International Finance Corporation, or USAID, other places like that. And alternatively, these people see that if they have, if they're on the right side of the administration, maybe they can use that administration or expect the administration not to prosecute themselves and their companies and their allies. So, there's big money in this vast government of ours, and it should be no surprise that, it's a two-way street. These international players are trying to get benefits out of these politicians. Politicians, unlike most politicians, are very easy to buy because they're not that wealthy. And, 100,000 here, or heaven forfend, a million or 2 million or 5 million, it makes a big difference in the lives of these aspiring politicians. So, the stories about the various Chinese parties who are flirting around the 1996 election, the stories around the ways in which Irish-American businessmen may have been involved raising money and channeling money to Hillary Clinton for her first senatorial campaign. I mean, wherever you look under a rock, there's a potential nexus between a foreign donor and not simply the Clintons, but, especially the Clintons over their long lives, going way back. And, unfortunately, what we're also seeing here is that the people who might really go after this, they too seem to have conflicts. The James Comey's, the Robert Mueller, the Rod Rosenstein, even Barack Obama and Loretta Lynch, all of these people have potential real conflicts of interest. And so we, the people, are not getting the kind of fair shake that we should get. We're not getting to the bottom of how money has been used or may have been used to corrupt our system. And, we really deserve to get that.
Well, I think you hit on the point here, which is that both parties have been involved in schemes that are highly irregular, highly questionable, and possibly highly criminal. But we have an interesting departure from the norm with the Clintons. I mean, they dominated political power in the United States. When I say they, I could say they. Bill Clinton being president, reelected to the presidency. We have Hillary coming later, being appointed by Barack Obama as Secretary of State. Barack Obama himself being, I had called him a creature of the Clintons and the Chicago machine. And he's proving of late, he's proving the validity of that criticism. And they seem to form a cabal, a small tight group. Recently, I talked about the swamp and the sinkhole. And these political folks find themselves located in one or the other, or perhaps even both. And it is about getting placed in such a way that their future, their economic future, their political future practically is guaranteed. They don't have to worry about anything.
Right.
We still have the contention on the part of government that they're looking into things. There's a lot of stuff they're looking into. But I think you would agree with me that not much has gelled so far that looks even remotely as a prosecution.
Well, yeah. So as I understand it, one of the reasons that Mitch McConnell just announced that the Senate will stay in session at least through the first 2 weeks of August is that the Democrats in the Senate are doing everything they can to obstruct the process of letting Donald Trump have his nominees fill the high positions that need to be filled in the Department of Justice. I guess today they're talking about the FBI. And frankly, there's been no movement that I've seen at all to get rid of John Koskinen and the nest of vipers who remain in the IRS who, who tolerated the behavior, which I think should be an affront to people across the political spectrum, particularly the behavior of Lois Lerner and the successors in the tax-exempt organization of the IRS. So there's been, we all think an election's been won, and it has been won, but in order to have this operation move forward, we have to remember that when Bill Clinton was, after he was elected president, after he was inaugurated, he fired all 93 U.S. attorneys. And I believe Bush also fired some attorneys, but there are a lot of legacy Clinton people still holding levers of power, a lot of legacy, obviously, Obama people holding levers of power that, will frustrate any kind of prosecution. And as I understand it, there's this fiction, there's a distinction between political and career appointees when it may well be that many of the so-called career people are actually highly partisan operatives. So, to your point, more narrowly, one of the things that I've been concentrating on the last several months is looking at what is in the known public record, i.e. something that I can find or you can find, anybody can find, about the state of the Clinton Foundation, and then comparing what is also in the known public record about what James Comey found when he was inserted into the Southern District U.S. Attorney's Office late in 91, swearing in early in 2002, why wasn't James Comey and why wasn't Robert Mueller, why were those people not able to put the Clinton Foundation in the legal jeopardy it deserves now to be and save us all from 15 years of escalating fraud around the world and disgrace? Why weren't they able to do that? What was going on back then? Those are some tough questions, Whether Donald Trump Jr. took a 20-minute meeting with some lunatic from, why that person was even allowed to be in the United States, and why did Preet Bharara ask her to come over, and did she overstay her visa? I mean, these types of issues, the questions are interesting, but I think a far better set of questions is, why did Robert Mueller, why did James Comey, why did Rod Rosenstein, the current Deputy Attorney General, why did they miss the massive evident frauds that are there for you to see in the public domain? All you need to do is compare the state laws, the federal laws, the foreign laws, the regulations against the disclosures and the defects in the disclosures that are there for you to see. Why could these people stop this a long time ago? And I think the answer to the question is, as you say, Patrice, both parties are touched by it. The Bush wing of the Republican Party is touched by it. The Romney wing of the Republican Party is touched by it. He was governor in Massachusetts when large elements of this Clinton Foundation fraud were operated from Massachusetts, and he did nothing about it. And then, of course, I think that what happened with President Obama and their administration is they may have had a suspicion that the Clinton Foundation was not in the best of shape, but they had no earthly idea how much of a fraud it was at the time that they took. They suggested to the world that Hillary Clinton would be a great Secretary of State. They get her confirmed, I would argue, fraudulently, hiding from her fellow senators, hiding from the American public, the depth of depravity of the Clinton Foundation and disgrace, and the defective, illegal filings and solicitations around the world, missing money, all that was hidden. And then when Barack Obama was sworn in and Hillary came on board as Secretary of State, they attempted to restructure it, But, you know, the moves they made, I would argue, and I think the lawyers I've talked to would argue, only compounded the problems. All this stuff happening under the nose of Robert Mueller, who was FBI head, I believe, from September 4th, 2001 to September 4th, 2013, or thereabouts. You know, how come he didn't catch this? And why would, you know, who did the diligence on Comey and decided it was a good idea to put the very person who missed all of this the first time back in control of the FBI in 2013 forward? And by the way, who did the diligence on Rod Rosenstein? You know, who failed to notice the many problems that the Clinton Foundation has had in Baltimore, in Maryland? Who failed to notice that, you know, that it's possible that Rod Rosenstein's team missed the full extent of the problems with the Ronvoxy drug manufacturer that seems to have shipped adulterated and defective drugs around the world via the Clinton Foundation and via elements of our U.S. government in PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief? And why didn't Rod Rosenstein catch the fraud of the Bush-Haiti Foundation, which started in January of 2010 for it? Why did he miss all that? Why did Barack Obama contribute to the Clinton Bush 80 Fund in 2010 with a portion of his Nobel Peace Prize winnings? Yeah, you know, there's so many conflicts here. And I think the average American is a lot smarter than these D.C. swamp dwellers believe that we are. And I think and hope that Donald Trump is going to find his feet here, some gumption, expose this. I mean, this morning, apparently, he tweeted something out about how, you know, how did Hillary Clinton, how did the mainstream press let Hillary Clinton, I don't know if he went so far as to say in the entire Clinton family, get away with all this stuff? I think the American people deserve answers to these tough questions, and we deserve an opportunity to fit the regulatory apparatus to charities and also multinational companies. Using 2017 tools instead of, you know, 1969 or 86 tools. The reason we're not catching these in Washington, D.C. is because the swamp and both parties don't want to cut, but the people do. And the people are rising up. We need to be heard.
Well, it's the swamp and the sinkhole running neck and neck. All these people that you just rattled off the names of are connected. They've been located or placed in particular situations, positions, where they would be, if called upon, to show some allegiance to the people who put them there by not seeing a lot of things that are totally out of order. I mean, how do you get, as the Secretary of State, how do you get to give the green light to the purchase of 20% of the U.S.'s uranium and nobody knows about it? No vote is taken.
Well, yeah, I mean, what I would say, you know, Wimbledon, I like them. I'm not a great tennis player, but I enjoy tennis and I follow it. And, you know, Wimbledon, one of the four top international championships of the world, is now being played as we speak in the United Kingdom. And, you know, I just noticed that the winner of that in the male and female singles champion this year will receive a prize for what amounts to 2 weeks' work of $2.2 million each. And, you know, some might say that's a high number. $2.2 million, call that $3 million each to just use round numbers. Now, the truth is that these people, to win, to get, you know, get across the line, have to work very, very hard, and they can't go out with the same approach and the same speech and a half-hearted attempt and not actually try. They go out and they work their butts off, running around like crazy, trying to hit a ball back and forth at 120 miles an hour with all kinds of spin on it, and it's down to them. They can't blame their loss on their coach or their advisor or their weather or, you know, the Russians or something else. They're out there for all the world to see, and they make 2.2 million pounds if they win one tournament. Now, explain to me why there's any equity in life for a failed presidential candidate twice to be going around the world and collecting, it's rumored, $225,000 for a 20-minute speech about nothing. You know, to some trade show or some corporation or some, you know, investment firm or whatever. I mean, you know, we want to get upset about cronyism. It is not right that these high political figures would get, you know, as Barack Obama has just got potentially a $60 million advance with his wife for I don't know how many books. You know, I would, you know, with great respect, I think Barack Obama is certainly an important historical figure, but his writing, assuming it was his writing, leaves a lot to be desired. And I don't know of many people in nonfiction. Now, J.K. Rowling, Hillary loves J.K. Rowling and fiction. But, you know, nonfiction is not read as much as fiction. And nonfiction authors don't make as much as successful fiction authors. So please justify these high payments, whether it's to the Bush family, the Laura Bush, to George W. Bush, or to the Clintons, or to the Barack Obama. And the average American wants to understand, you know, exactly what's going on here. Are these big multimedia companies writing checks to powerful people in hopes that they, you know, will get some protection for their broadcast business or their other businesses? And these various people who will seriously pay, and there's a long list of speeches here, you know, for Hillary Clinton to make in a week almost $1 million, no doubt giving the same speech and then refusing to disclose the contents of the speech, which we only found out some of the contents thanks to WikiLeaks, is absurd, especially when you consider that in this country, in the most recent data in the Consumer Expenditure Survey, it talks about how much people make at the high end of this country. In the high-end household, approximately 2.1 people are earning wages. So when you hear that a high-end household is making $300,000, you got to divide that figure by 2.1. That's for a full year's work. Call it $150,000 for a full year. Why? And at the high end of our country, why do who is paying Hillary Clinton that kind of money, or Bill Clinton, you know, $500,000, $700,000, and flying these people around in private jets and expensive suites with their handlers? Well, what do they want to get out of that? That to me, it seems, is I understand actually paying Donald Trump, the private citizen, a lot of money for that, for conferences to talk about how to make real money. I don't get paying a government figure that kind of money. I don't get it. It's nothing more than a bribe, in my opinion. And in both parties, you should not be allowed to do that. If you're going to be serving the people, you should serve the people, and then you should retreat back to whatever it is you did before and just do a better job in your private life of what you did before. You shouldn't catapult from being, you know, somebody who it can be argued did a miserable job as governor in Arkansas, and as certainly a senator. You know, name one thing that Hillary Clinton did that has really, truly benefited New Yorkers meaningfully, thanks to her service as our senator for 8 years. It'd be hard-pressed to find something that amounts to $10 million, let alone $1 billion. And, you know, now she and Bill are swanning around. They have at least two mansions that we know about. You know, forget about JetBlue. Forget about first class. I mean, they're flying around in gigantic corporate aircraft, of course, contributing to global warming while bemoaning global warming. I mean, you know, it's just comical. It's comical. It's almost like, you know, the modern version of the fall of Rome.
I'm still fixated on the notion that all these years have passed, all these opportunities have passed to get answers to these kinds of questions, and it hasn't happened yet. It doesn't look like it will happen soon. And the Clintons, in the meantime, are in our faces about their ability to do very irregular things and get away with it. It seems to me that we need a probe of the probers. We need to have some kind of accountability. What should I call it? A session. Some kind of process by which everything is overturned and find out who is responsible for doing what. Because you had earlier said, added together the kinds of money that went through the Clinton Foundation of suspicious origin is in excess of $1 trillion.
It if you count related entities, Patrice, if you count related entities.
Yes. And you know, there are governments all over the world that don't have a national budget of $1 trillion. Here we have this, and it doesn't seem to bother the IRS. It doesn't seem to bother the heads of state, particularly Barack Obama. We don't see any zeal about trying to find out where this money went. What kinds of secret deals were these people involved in which they abused their authority as elected officials? And still, even to this day, Hillary Clinton has not turned over all of her electronic devices to the government as demanded. She hasn't done it. So we really need to get some answers. I'll just say for 1 minute to get people primed. Charles Ortel will take your calls shortly at 888-874-4888. Continue, Charles.
Yeah, so I mean, what we've set up, Beatrice, is we've set up a system that's based primarily from Washington, D.C., with a live links into New York and Los Angeles and Chicago, where the cronies and the politicians assert the need to have a gigantic bureaucracy, peopled with their friends, doling out favors to themselves and their friends, that is, you know, has the appearance of being regulated, but in fact is not regulated. And then they go and they exempt themselves from you know, the meaningful teeth of these regulations. So, for example, in Congress, the congressional aides are exempt from insider trading, which I think is ridiculous. That needs to be changed. I say that as somebody who's, you know, had a career in Wall Street. And, you know, that's just crazy. They set up this elaborate healthcare bureaucracy and then exempt Congress from it. I mean, we need to stop with this and get back to base principles, as you say. And, you know, if there is, when you do the math, there is, of course, many continuing problems in this country with poverty, all sorts of problems. But when you look at the math, the incomes of the poor are a tiny percentage of the amount spent on our bureaucracy. So what we're creating is, you know, there's certainly a need for all this government help. And then instead of helping the people who deserve the help, we're helping the bureaucrats and the cronies. And that's just wrong. And I think there's a room to downsize the bureaucracy, get more money and assistance, true assistance to those who are truly need it. And lift those up who, you know, find themselves temporarily in a place where they need some transitionary help. We don't need to spend almost $7 trillion all in on government in this country. We just don't need to do it.
In your mind, based on what you see, we have a call. Let's take the call first. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air with Charles Ortel.
Thank you very much. I think, a very important question. If Mr. Ortel has done fantastic research and discovered all this evidence of the actions of this so-called charity and has presented this information to authorities in various places and states and countries and so forth, and I was thinking of this. If people who have the information and evidence that he has supplied don't act on it, isn't that malfeasance on their part? And can't they be charged with some kind of offense, a crime, for not acting upon information indicating that someone has broken the law? What happens in that case? No one has responded, even though they have the evidence that Mr. Ortel has discovered. What's going on here? Because I would think that if you provided with evidence of a crime committed by an organization like that, that you should act on it. And how come no one has been charged with some kind of malfeasance for that reason?
That's a great question. Thanks for asking it. So what happened was, you know, this process began for me when I wrote an article in Breitbart, March 16th, 2015, with so many red flags, why isn't the IRS auditing the Clinton Foundation? Thereafter, it's been a long process talking to many different people. The way in which I believe inside this country investigations work is really for the protection of all of us. Investigations are supposed to be proceed in confidence until they're either abandoned or until they result in an indictment. So I fully expected that nothing would happen prior to the November 2016 election, but that we might begin to see evidence of indictments after the election, after there was a transition and a chance for the new team to actually evaluate the evidence and compare the evidence uncovered in the various investigations to, as you say, the laws that apply and the regulations that apply. And now we are, to be fair, we are sitting here in July 11th or 12th or whatever today's date is, 2017. Donald Trump's administration has seated a minority of the senior people below cabinet. And I'm told that there are more people already on Bob Mueller's team, former FBI director Bob Mueller's team, investigating the Russia thing than there are than President Trump and his people have been able to put in the Justice Department. And it would be the Justice Department who would make calls on prosecution, not the IRS, I don't believe. I think the IRS would refer these matters to the Justice Department. So at federal level, there are issues. At state levels, sometimes states defer to the federal government. So it's possible there were many stories last year about federal investigations. There's a great writer for the Daily Caller News Foundation, Richard Pollack, wrote a piece where he said there are four separate FBI investigations as of late last year. So we don't know where those sit. And we don't know whether those investigations might complicate the efforts of individual states to look at it. Then turning to the international foray, I'm told by multiple sources that the way foreign governments tend to look at this is that until the U.S. gets off a dime and does something, foreign governments don't want to meddle. We know, for example, that Donald Trump is headed to France, I believe, tomorrow or maybe tonight. And the French government is actually the largest named contributor, when you look in the actual details, to the Clinton Foundation, and in particular to the deeply troubled and defective HIV/AIDS piece of the Clinton Foundation. So, I have made approaches to the French government various ways to try to get them to stand up and evaluate once again what really happened beginning in September 2006, the contributions routed by Travelers Through France and the French government routing it into this organization called Unité in Switzerland. Why aren't the French people and why isn't the French government doing something about it? And maybe Donald Trump will broach this subject, or at least his aides will, on this recent scheduled foray imminently into France. I am not somebody with experience in government. I'm not interested in going into government. I have worked on large complex transactions before, and this is certainly complicated. So I'm willing to concede that maybe it's going to take many more months to get it across the line. But, I'd love to see the mainstream media devote a fraction of the time and attention that you as listeners and Utrice and your colleagues have been devoting to this thing, because it's very important and affects all of us.
Thanks, David, for your question. Chris from New York, you're on the air, Chris.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm so glad I have an opportunity. I'm just going to make a quick statement before I pose my question. When I first learned about the amount of money that these presidential candidates or political candidates received giving these speeches, I was absolutely mortified. And if I remember correctly, I think it went back to the Bush era when it was like, I don't remember. It was the first one I had heard was $100,000, and I thought that I had heard incorrectly because I had the impression, stupidly so, that when these people left office, at least the presidency, and they gave, speeches at universities, and, they did it more as an honor, and maybe they received some form of honorarium. Nevertheless, not to go off on that. I have a question. The amounts of money that Clinton received when she gave, and it's not just her, and I think this focus on the Clintons per se, especially regarding the speeches that they give, I think is a little uneven when you consider that there is a Congress and there's a whole system in this country that needs to have this checked. They did this. They're able to receive these amounts of money because it is permitted for them. I just read earlier this year that Barack Obama received $400,000 to give a speech to A&E, Arts and Entertainment, and he gave a speech on Wall Street for another $400,000. At least we could say he's no longer president. But I have a question. She received, I think, $27 million herself alone from 2013 to 2015, giving speeches several times to Goldman Sachs. She gave pharmaceutical companies in Canada. I was just wondering, since she was still Secretary of State at the time, if I'm not mistaken, right?
No, you are mistaken.
Was she Secretary of State in 2015?
No. She left in February 2013, she left. But it's still unseemly.
Okay, but my question is this. The amount of money that she received, even at that time, does that money belong to her since she's still a government employee, so to speak? I mean, she works for us in a way, okay? So that money that she received, these huge pornographic amounts, it really borders on cheap pornography, the amounts that they give. It's just because it's not justifiable. Does that money go to her private account, or does that go to the party that she belongs to, or where does this money go?
No one knows is the truth. I mean, there are tax returns for the Clintons that you can access. You just Google presidential tax returns. You'll get to a site that has all the major candidates and their actual tax returns, and the Clintons are out there. But that's if we believe that whatever they filed is really their income. There's never been, at the Clinton Foundation, for example, there's never been an audit, a real independent audit. The firm they used from the beginning was not independent in the technical accounting term, and the reports they produce are garbage. They're not compliant with applicable regulations. So you don't really know how much money was sent towards the Clinton Foundation or to the Clintons personally around the world. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I have no problem. You know, if somebody is a standout in, you know, intense competition, global competition, you know, fantastic entertainer, fantastic sports figure, fantastic scientist or whatever, paying that person a salary, enormous amounts of money. But for a politician, you know, a failed politician, be flying around the world in corporate jets and collecting, I believe, one thing I noticed was a bunch of speeches out in California where, you know, on successive days, Hillary Clinton in 1 week was making $225,000 a day for these garbage speeches. I mean, it's not as if she's, you know, defining a new religion or telling us how to live to be 200 years old. Based on experience. I mean, it's just drivel. And, you know, pay to her and to the family on top of exorbitant expenses for her and her team at a time when she was preparing to mount a presidential run. I just think this is behavior that I would hope people on the right and the left, maybe not the politicians but the voters, can agree that this is should be banned behavior. You shouldn't be allowed to do this.
Chris, finish your question.
I just want to say this is where we should have had a women's march and a man's march on Washington, okay? Because I understand how important this is, because this affects more areas than people realize, okay? This kind of money this is like we're living in a kingdom from the Middle Ages, okay? This is not a democracy. I don't begrudge anyone's wealth, and I don't begrudge anyone who has made a lot of money. I never have. I'm not envious of it. They deserve it, and that's it, okay? But when you're talking about this, when you put this category with this kind of money, all right, this is where we should have huge marches and, if need to be, a little bit of a scuffles here and there to express our discontent and the fact that they should make this illegal, because I just find that unacceptable, because America is suffering not only from economic problems, okay, and I'm not proselytizing here, but honestly, there's no ethic in this country anymore. There's absolutely no ethic whatsoever. Everything is justified in the name of profit. It's not even care. It's not even working hard and making a lot of money. I mean, even when you gamble, you go to a casino, you know you might lose your money. You know what I mean? And you say, okay, what the heck? I'm going to try. I might win. This is totally against any kind of middle class person in the country. And when you give it to these people who now think that they are of the high born because they've served politics, I just find it unacceptable. And I also, and sorry, as far as the women's movement is concerned,
Chris, hold on. We got to go. We're out of time. Thank you so much. Your question was answered. Well, that brings us to the end of the program today. There's still a lot more coming because situations are developing, especially abroad, that will have an impact on what we are discussing today. The main thing is here we have a great example, a screaming example of how our government does not work. And depending on the power that you have, you could do whatever you wish to do. Charles, I thank you again for being with us today. We'll talk later about whether we can stretch this, because we do have so many questions coming in.
I'm happy to do it, Yatrice. I just want to make one small point. I'm going to do a favor to the Clinton family. I'm going to promote Hillary Clinton's next book, because I've been given the advance sneak peek at what the title is. Her first book, one of her early books, was It Takes a Village. Her next book is going to be It Takes a Pillage.
It Takes a Pillage. Oh, my God. Well, and that is true. And I think that's a great idea. It takes a pillage. Stay tuned. Coming up next, we have a wonderful program for you to pay attention to because it's so relevant in our times. It's the Intelligence Hour with Kevin Shipp, S-H-I-P-P. So stay tuned for that. And we will see each other tomorrow. Thanks again for listening. Bye-bye.